This is Greening of the Great Lakes inside MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's your host, Dr. Kirk Heinze.
Well, it's a pleasure to welcome back to Greening of the Great Lakes, Mark Phelan. Mark's a well-known automotive critic and columnist for the Detroit Free Press. Mark, first, Happy New Year, and welcome back to Greening of the Great Lakes.
No, thank you. It's great to be back with you.
Well, Mark, it's been about a year since we talked, about the same time as the North American International Auto Show opened last year. You'll be pleased to know, I think, that I am now the proud owner of a 2012 Chevrolet Volt. Well, I've had it for just since about early December, and I'm loving it. I'm just absolutely loving it. And I got to tell you a story real quickly here. But you know when the battery testing flap kind of ensued and there were some fires, et cetera? I checked with my dealer about, well, do I want to pick it up right away or is there going to be some kind of fix and do I need to pick it up later? I got a call on a Saturday night at 7 o'clock from the national sales manager for Chevy Volt out of Grosse Pointe. He and his kids were decorating the Christmas tree. And he called me, and he wanted me to know that I had nothing to worry about with that Chevy Volt. What do you think about that?
You know, they are paying such close attention to those owners and taking such good care of them. I'm glad to hear that they did that for you. But honestly, I'm not surprised. It seems like everything they've done with this vehicle has had that level of attention to detail.
Yeah, I know you've been tracking this, Mark. Chevy gave owners of the Volt a couple of options. One was basically to give the car back at full price. The other was to take a loaner until the battery fix, whatever they're going to do, is in. And they had very few takers on that. Did that surprise you at all?
Honestly, it didn't, because the car is performing so well. And you know, every owner that I've spoken to is delighted with it. And the set of circumstances that led to the fire, you know, a crash test that basically totaled out the vehicle and then the vehicle is left sitting unattended for some period of time, that's such an unusual set of circumstances that I think that, you know, owners recognize that that's something that, you know, doesn't really apply to them.
General Motors said that they have a protocol for crashes where the battery is essentially drained immediately. But they claim that that protocol was either not communicated or not understood by the National Testing Service that did the battery tests. What have you heard on that?
My understanding is that General Motors understood that just like after a car is, you know, a conventional car is crashed, you drain the gas out of the gas tank so that it can't, you know, catch fire at some future point, that you should do the same thing, draining the power out of the batteries. And they didn't get that information adequately to everybody. And frankly, you know, it's, you know, good that the government testing agency ran this test and found out about it, because if it hadn't been adequately communicated, better that, you know, the mishap take place in a government secured parking lot than in some junkyard after whenever the first Volt actually gets, you know, totaled out. So I think that yeah, everybody's pretty much doing their job here, and it looks like it's going quite well.
I'm talking with Mark Phelan, who is a well-known automotive writer and columnist for the Detroit Free Press. Mark, I'll say on my Volt, I'm at about 500 miles now, and I've used 3 gallons of gas.
I still can't get over how well that vehicle delivers on all the promises. And I will bet you that you're coming pretty close to, you know, what they promised as far as, you know, someplace around 40 to 50 miles that you can go on a fully charged set of batteries before the engine kicks in to give you the extra range. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's an amazing vehicle. Let's turn to the 2012 North American International Auto Show. Certainly, battery-powered cars will be part of the green theme, but what else is going on at the show that would be considered green? I know you've written about a few things.
Yep. Well, one of the big themes that we're seeing is that a lot of the technology that so far has been restricted to hybrid cars and even, you know, electric cars is now working its way very much into the mainstream. You're going to see, in order to boost fuel efficiency to the level that everybody wants to, just about every car will soon have some level of electrification, you know, a battery, a motor, something to help it, you know, get by with a smaller engine, essentially. And there's a lot of that on display at the show.
One thing you've written about is the auto stop or stop start that's available in some vehicles. Mixed reviews on that, or is that a good thing?
It's a very good thing. It basically, this turns the engine off when you're sitting at a stoplight, stop sign, anytime that the car's not moving and the engine wouldn't previously have been idling, because you're just burning gasoline and not going anywhere at that point. And this, you know, shuts it off, and as soon as you begin to take your foot off the brake, it starts the engine again. The Buick LaCrosse eAssist that General Motors started selling late in 2011 features it, and just about every hybrid on the road has got some version of the same thing. What's really interesting now is that we're seeing it move into very, very mainstream vehicles. I mean, the Dodge Dart compact car is going to have this. I mean, when you're in a compact car that will, you know, start for under $20,000, at that point you can definitely say that technology has hit the mainstream. And what matters is how well do they implement it? Is the engine restart immediate so that people don't have to worry about, you know, slowing down traffic, not being able to get across an intersection? Well, the pluses are that it increases your fuel economy about 3.5%, which is tremendously significant. The minuses are that you have to be very good about how you implement the system. I mean, it has to work so that the driver doesn't notice when the engine shuts off at a traffic light or a stop sign, and the engine has to restart immediately and imperceptibly as soon as the driver takes their foot off the brake. As long as you get the implementation right, there's really not much of a downside to it, because the driver will hardly ever recognize that it's doing anything. The only effect is that they get better fuel economy.
Before we started talking about stop-start, we were talking about electric vehicles, and apparently, and you can correct my pronunciation here, but is it Tata Technologies, the conglomerate that owns Jaguar and Land Rover, at least an arm of that conglomerate, is going to unveil a new electric vehicle concept at the North American International Auto Show?
They are, actually, and it's Tata, by the way.
Tata.
It's an Indian company, huge Indian conglomerate that does a lot of very sophisticated technical work, and they are going to be showing an electric vehicle as part of a design competition that Michelin, the tire maker, puts on, because tires help a lot in terms of reducing fuel consumption, and it's a very interesting little vehicle, and it shows that interest in green technologies and in fuel and reducing fuel consumption is by no stretch of the imagination limited to America and Europe and Japan. Every part of the world wants to do this now.
Mark, last year you were pretty bullish on green technology in cars. It sounds like you continue to be. Any changes in your perception or perspective over the last year since last we talked?
The thing that I've noticed is that the trend is moving even faster, I think, than I expected. I mean, things like the hybridization of mainstream cars. I would not have thought that was going to take hold as fast as it has. But at the auto show, you know, here, we've got the first version of the Chevy Malibu will come equipped with that, and that's how, you know, the vehicle will get 37 miles a gallon on the highway. So we've seen, you know, a lot of the technologies become mainstream faster than I expected. And also, you know, I was very pleased last year when General Motors announced that they were going to sell a diesel version of the Chevy Cruze, because diesels help a lot of Europeans reduce the fuel they use, reduce greenhouse emissions, and diesels haven't, you know, gotten much of a foothold with the American public in general here. And the best way to change that is for a vehicle like the Chevy Cruze to come out and offer phenomenal fuel economy. So those are, you know, the two things that I've seen that surprised me most over the last few months.
One thing, and I can speak from my own experience, that perhaps gives consumers some pause is all of these new technologies are coming out in rapid fashion, almost machine gun fashion. and you jump in like I did with the Chevrolet Volt, in the back of your mind, you're wondering which of these technologies are going to make it in the marketplace, which of these technologies are not, and am I going to miss out on something that's going to come out in a year or two from now that I wish I would have waited for?
Yeah, that's the early adopter's dilemma, isn't it? It's the same if you're buying a telephone or a computer. Do I want to be one of the first ones to have the newest, greatest thing, or do I want to wait and see? I don't think if a person decides to wait and see at this point, they're probably never going to get on the ride because the ride isn't going to stop. Everybody is bringing out more and more technology. There isn't any one technology that you can look at and say, this is clearly going to be the winner. Smaller, more advanced engines and electrification and alternative fuel, I think all of these things are going to be part of the future as automakers look to reduce fuel consumption and emissions.
My guest is Mark Phelan, who is the automotive writer and columnist for the Detroit Free Press. Mark, as you look around internationally at the adoption of green vehicles, battery-powered, hybrid, what have you, what are you hearing in European markets, China, India, etc.?
Well, first of all, those markets are tremendously serious about this. And Europe, after scoffing at hybrids for a long time, we're seeing hybrids take hold. And there are a couple of cars at the auto show, in fact, that are a very interesting example of that. Mercedes is showing a pair of hybrids of its E-Class midsize sedan. That's the best-selling car that Mercedes has in the United States, and they've got one diesel that's just for America, China, and Japan. And for Europe, they're combining one of their diesel engines with hybrid technology. And that's something that we haven't seen before, that when you start combining diesels and hybrids, you get into very, very high fuel efficiency, but you also get into high cost. And it's interesting that the European market is accepting hybrids at that level now. And when you talk about China and India, the big developing markets, they want to be at the forefront of this. I mean, China spent months convincing General Motors that building and selling the Volt in China was a good idea. And India, we see here, they're one of their biggest companies is showing technology for a new electric car. The greening of the auto industry is something that's on the front burner for I think every part of the world.
There's a perception out there, and perhaps I share it, and you can correct me if I'm wrong. But Ford was sort of at the forefront not only of greener cars but also greening their whole corporate sustainability structure. Is it your perspective now that not only domestic but international automakers are caught up to Ford, or is Ford still at the forefront, given the leadership of Bill Ford and his own personal interest in environmental sustainability?
Well, there's no question that Bill Ford takes this seriously, and the company as a whole does. One of the things that's interesting about Ford is that they have tried to combine affordability and green technology. And that's one of the reasons that you didn't see them pushing out to the front of the pack with one of the first electric vehicles, like the Chevy Volt and the Nissan Leaf last year. Ford is working to make their high-volume models very fuel-efficient, and that's their primary area. I think we're going to continue to see that. They're among the leaders in the move to smaller, more advanced engines, and that's a good way to reduce fuel consumption. And also the new Fusion that's at the auto show this year will have a hybrid version, and they haven't given all of the details as far as fuel mileage, but what we're hearing is that it's going to be very impressive. It's going to be well over 40 miles a gallon in city driving, and that's an area that Ford has decided to put a lot of emphasis in.
Mark, I got time for about one more question here, but I remember 2 to 3 years ago, the auto show was launched, and there was prevailing sense of gloom about things in the industry. And then last year, the momentum picked up, and there was more enthusiasm. Are you sensing that this year will be that momentum, that upward momentum, will continue, and 2012 will be a banner year for the industry?
That's the way it's looking. I mean, many automakers delayed vehicle programs when the recession was at its depths. And what we're seeing at this auto show is that they're starting to catch up. They're a little more optimistic, and a lot of the vehicles that they postponed are going to be hitting the market this year. Another aspect is that the European economy is looking very shaky because of the debt problem and questions about the euro, and that means that America is likely to be the soundest, most profitable market for automakers next year. So we're going to be, the focus of a whole lot of attention. That's one of the reasons that you see so much from the European automakers at this year's show. That's the reason that, in addition to a lot of mid-sized family sedans from Ford and Honda and Chevrolet at the show, we're seeing a real glut of new luxury vehicles from the Europeans and from Lexus and Cadillac, because Europe is on its way to potential trouble, and America is where they think they're going to make a lot of money this year.
I've been talking with Mark Phelan, who is automotive critic and columnist for the Detroit Free Press. Mark, always a pleasure.
Thank you, Gary.
That was Greening of the Great Lakes with Dr. Kirk Heinze on MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Find more online at greeningofthegreatlakes.com. You're tuned to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. And for more MSU Today, visit us on the web at msutoday.com.
Hi, it's Scott Westerman for the Michigan State University Alumni Association. And if you're the parent of a Spartan, there's no better gift you can give than a lifetime membership in the largest Spartan organization in the world. Joining the MSUAA family opens the doors to our network of over 500,000 Spartans who'll help you feel right at home wherever you go, who can help connect you with Spartans on the inside, who can help you grow in your career. People who give you special treatment just because you're a Spartan. And an investment in a life membership in the MSU Alumni Association doesn't just add value to your Spartan life. It helps Spartans everywhere build more competitive skill sets and move more quickly in the direction of their dreams. Learn more about an MSUAA life membership online at alumni.msu.edu. That's alumni.msu.edu. The Michigan State University Alumni Association. Your personal network for life.
You're listening to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
And for more MSU Today, visit us on the web at msutoday.com.
I'm Scott Westerman, acting the role of President Simon.
Well, those are pretty big shoes to fill right there.
Yeah, I don't think I want to try. How are you doing, Mark?
We're doing great. It's great to have you on board here, and you're in a different chair today.
Well, it's a great chair. It's an old chair. I've been doing these kind of things for many years. And our first guest likes to think about life as a salad. And it's become a metaphor for both our nation and our university. Celebrating diversity is an important part of what makes MSU great, and that's what Dr. Paulette Granberry Russell does every day. As President Simon's senior advisor for diversity and director of MSU's Office of Inclusion, she is also at the center of the storm whenever there's controversy in our rich salad bar. Yeah. What is a typical day like in your life?
A typical day. It kind of falls back on that salad metaphor. It means a typical day for us can include a broad range of issues, from the controversial to things that are less controversial, meaning when you have a campus the size of Michigan State with over 60,000 people, you have a broad range of diversity that's here. And it often means that sometimes some very wonderful things go on a day-to-day basis, and then from time to time, you have our little hiccups like we do in the broader society. So we deal with the controversial issues of discrimination to ways that we can otherwise advance diversity and inclusion at Michigan State.
I think one of the things from the athletic department's perspective, living in a larger environment here on campus, is I always lean on Paulette as the do what's right person versus the diversity person. And I think when you really break diversity down, It can come in so many fractions, but I look at it as different ways of thinking, different ways of approaching life, and having respect for all that's out there. And that's what Paulette has brought to my life in sitting in so many different meetings. It's not necessarily a race, sex, anything like that, although that's a component of mm-hmm. your job. What it is everybody's entitled to a different background, a different way of life, and it's how do we blend all that together on this campus.
Right, and this is a very serious kind of issue regarding this notion of doing what's right. And when you look at this in the context of diversity, it's hard to say what's right on any given day for the range of perspectives that are here. And so oftentimes it's kind of sorting out what might be right under the circumstances today. And other times it's just allowing what is here to hopefully live in a space that's more accepting, even with all the differences that we have here. That's the beauty of Michigan State.
What happens when something goes wrong? How do you engage to make it right?
See, I prefer to see it not necessarily as when things go wrong, as much as when these differences kind of collide with each other. And how do we sort through those differences, and how can we find some commonality in our perspectives? Even though we may differ in our backgrounds and our experiences, but how can we find that place where we might be able to disagree, yet we can do it in a way that's civil and respectful? And hopefully from those interactions, we might reach a point of acceptance of our differences. So
I think, too, it's a situation where, Paulette is a great advocate for bringing people together and discussing those issues rather than let them fester. And even at home when you watch kids, if you're able to resolve a problem quickly, the likelihood of things moving forward in a positive way happens much, much quicker, much more productively than if you let that rift or that difference of opinion really fester and start to grow into something that's unhealthy and uncalled for. It's okay to have difference of opinions, mm-hmm. but it's also very healthy to come together so you can create some level of understanding, some level of acceptance, and you don't have to agree, but you mm-hmm. have to understand. I think that's the important part of our jobs here on campus.
Absolutely.
So you teach rules of engagement.
Oh, rules of engagement and how to hopefully arrive at a respectful mutual understanding, you know, and hopefully a win-win for the various perspectives that are here.
Well, when we look at how the press reports these things, they highlight the anger and the controversy, but you do a very good job of diffusing that. Mm-hmm. How do you do it?
The anger can be kind of a natural evolution of old hurts and pains and differences. And typical in those situations, what one has a responsibility to do is create a space where that pain, where that hurt, and where those expressions of pain and hurt can be spoken, articulated, even with the kind of passion that makes it uncomfortable for people, and then allow another perspective to come into play. Understanding that I may not be able to get the person who's feeling that hurt and pain to recognize that we can find a way out of this at that moment, but I think with time and with discussion, we can get there. And it can be very difficult at times, especially when you're talking about issues, whether it's around racial differences, whether it's around gender differences, whether it's around sexual orientation. When you have a history, as we do in this country, where discrimination existed and it was embedded in our laws, some of those old hurts and pains are the legacy of some of that history.
And you're dealing with children.
Oh, sometimes you're dealing with children, but many days you're dealing with individuals who regard themselves as seasoned adults. And from where I sit, from incoming students who might be 17 and 18, who may come out of fairly homogeneous communities, where they've not had the exposure to the kind of diversity that they're going to experience at Michigan State, to even seasoned faculty and staff who have been here and have been members of our community and certainly their own communities, where they may have different experiences, but not altogether the same as international students who arrive here with all the differences that they bring. This can make for some very interesting discussions and sometimes conflict.
Mm-hmm. You almost have a job very much like an athletic director in that at times, we do have a very diverse and very positive campus. Mm-hmm. And at times you'll hear some of that positive coming back. But I'm guessing, like an AD office, there's not too many people walking through the door saying, I'm having a great experience and this is just a wonderful place. It's generally somebody who wants to readjust the rudder back in the direction of their frame of mind. And sometimes that can be a daunting task for those of us almost in any role. It's difficult at times to keep that positive and everything good that's going on at Michigan State when you have that frequent encounter with individuals that feel like they've fallen away from what their ideals are as a person, as an organization, as a club. And like I do, you deal with so many different groups on campus, and every one of them think you're their savior.
That's right. When you figure what we're the size of a small city, on any given day you can have 60,000 people here from every state in the union, all 83 counties in Michigan, and over 130 countries are represented at Michigan State. Mm-hmm. Now you just think about both the challenges and we think about the opportunities. And you're right, when they walk in the door, it's not typically to say, I've had a great day, Paulette. Every once in a while someone will say that, and I'm just saying, well, thank you for not bringing today's situation to us. But most times it's here's something that's happened, and I need to do a pulse check, and I want to make sure that how I'm seeing this is correct. Or I need someone to intervene because I'm not sure that I know what might be the best way to bring about a solution to what's happened to me. But there's always a way either to negotiate through a difficult situation, navigate around it, or sometimes take it head on.
Mm-hmm. People ask me, you know, what are you most proud of as an athletic director? And as we go through some of the things, the two that really hit me is, one, I feel like we've made an impact with our faculty and respect for the athletic mm-hmm. program. I understand there's always measures to go to improve, but I believe we're making some headway. And I said that was one of my first goals the day I took the job, was I want to have respect on this campus. The second is when I sit back and I see large gatherings of Michigan State alums coming together, whether it be down in Southeast Michigan for a Final Four, at a bowl game, at events like that. What things on this campus bring you great pride, bring you joy, when you step back at the end of a long day and say, this is a really good place to work?
Mm. Boy, that's a wonderful question. I think what gives me the greatest pleasure in the work that I do is the interactions with the students. I mean, I enjoy certainly working with our faculty and staff, but I especially enjoy working with our students. I mean, we have, in my estimation, the brightest students that one could ever expect or hope to have on a campus. These are individuals who not only see the world differently, but bring with them a sense of curiosity. And sometimes, even for those who may not be as curious and maybe a little reticent in doing something that's different, there's still a way to get to that student and say, you might want to consider this as an option or try this, because we have such a broad range of things to support students, both in the classroom and outside the classroom. And students, sometimes we underestimate what they're able to do and what they can bring to the discussions and bring as solutions for anything that we do, whether it's your student athletes, whether it's the students in any of our majors on campus, even in social settings. They're mm-hmm. just delightful. They're delightful. And they give me that kind of sense of hope that when I feel as though I'm doing what I've been doing for 30 years and I have someone walk in who's fresh out of a high school experience and they're curious about something, you know, something that I might have experienced some time ago, but they're coming in with some new insight on it or just very curious about it, it gives me a chance to kind of reflect and get excited again. So I love our students.
Dr. Paulette Granberry-Russell is the director of MSU's Office of Inclusion. How can our listeners learn more about what your office does?
Oh, I would encourage them to go to our office website, www.inclusion.msu.edu. Can't get any simpler than that.
Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me here.
More MSU Today in a moment on AM 870 WKAR.
And for more MSU Today, visit us on the web at msutoday.com.
University Research Corridor, empowering Michigan.
This is an association of the three research universities in Michigan to really collaborate on a deeper level than we have in the past and highlight for ourselves and for the region and for the nation the strength in technology, innovation, new research, investment that we think is going to help change the Michigan economy.
That's University of Michigan President Mary Sue Coleman.
The mission of the URC is no less than to help transform the Michigan economy and to make this a vibrant place that young people will want to come and stay, that businesses will want to be in, because we are a place where a lot is happening, and we have the brain power for the new economy. It's here. It's in Michigan. We just need to tap it.
Visit us online at urcmich.org.
So Michigan is vibrant. Michigan has all these things, and we want to signal that to the entire world.
Visit the University Research Corridor online at urcmich.org.
Hi, it's Scott Westerman from the MSU Alumni Association. We've all heard the expression, it's all about who you know. And wherever you are on your career ladder, having a friend on the inside can make all the difference. When you join the MSU Alumni Association family, you're instantly connected to a 500,000 Spartans around the world, many of whom are key decision makers in just about every major enterprise. Whether you're looking for a way in or a way up, your MSU Alumni Association affiliation can help you link up with that MSU alum who'll always take your call just because you're a Spartan. Building your network right now before you need it is the best possible career insurance, and joining the MSU Alumni Association is the best possible way to get the most out of your Spartan life. Learn more online at alumni.msu.edu. That's alumni.msu.edu. The MSU Alumni Association, your personal network for life.
MSU Ag Bio Research, leading innovation in food, natural resources, and energy.
Well, one of the things we want listeners to know is how connected we are, that we're in a response mode of addressing real life problems in the real world here in Michigan.
Dr. Steve Pepke leads MSU Ag Bio Research.
Well, we're everywhere. We're the face of MSU across the state, in the local communities, with infrastructure and research expertise to address those local problems. MSU Ag Bioresearch is the research engine that undergirds the food and agricultural industry in the state, that undergirds our natural resource usage, recreational usages of sport, fishing, forestry, all of those things. And of course, with the recent interest in renewable energy, we have in a very big way moved into this arena as well.
MSU Ag Bio Research.
You're tuned to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
Visit us online at SpartanPodcast.com.
I'm Scott Westerman from the MSU Alumni Association, sitting in for President Simon today, along with my partner, MSU Athletic Director Mark Hollis. For the last three decades, Michigan State University has had a reputation as one of the best communication arts and sciences institutions in the nation. From journalism to broadcasting to new media and the world of video gaming and mobile applications, we cover all the bases. Most recently, CAS took over stewardship of the university's two radio stations and a multi-channel television operation. Leading that charge is the dean of the college, Pam Whitten. Dean Whitten joins us on MSU Today. Did you ever in your wildest dreams think you'd be a broadcaster?
What a great question to start out with, because I have to tell you, I never in my wildest dreams thought I would be a dean of a college. So life takes us in weird and wonderful places, doesn't it?
What did you want to be when you grew up, when you were a kid?
Either a war correspondent or I wanted to be an astronaut.
there was no glass ceiling as far as you were concerned.
No. Yeah. And as far as I'm concerned, it's not too late. I'm a little worried about my Olympic dreams still, but I figure as we age.
You know, I think this department is known nationally as the evaluator of commercials on the Super Bowl. What other things out there? Talk about that one a little bit, because that one is unique and does get a lot of national play. But talk about some of the other national focal points coming out of this college that the two folks sitting right in front of you came out of.
Well, it's a pretty broad array of things. So starting with advertising, this is kind of a fun story. I had the pleasure last year of being in Los Angeles right after the Super Bowl and meeting with one of our alum who runs the Deutsch Advertising Agency. And it was his agency that had actually made the Super Bowl ad that the ComArts Department of Advertising voted as the number one ad. And if you guys remember, it was the ad about the Volkswagen and the little boy dressed up as Darth Vader. And so what was touching to me is he shared with me, of course, that they got international attention for that ad, and justifiably so. But he said what meant the most to him was someone had sent him a link showing that the MSU advertising faculty had rated it number one. And that was the most meaningful to him of all.
More important than the Oscars.
Absolutely. Although I was just out visiting him last week in L.A., and he said, oh boy, the bar is high now, because they get a top at this year's Super Bowl. And I have no doubt that they will.
There are a lot of Spartans in Hollywood.
There are a lot of Spartans all over the world, all over the world. I just got back from South Korea a couple of weeks ago, where I met with a number of our alum working in multiple areas. And to tie back to Mark's question about other areas in the college that might surprise you, of course, you mentioned video games as a very strong component of our college. Well, one of our alums is the CEO of a rather significant video game company in South Korea, where video games are at a whole new level. And so if you had your job, Mark, in South Korea, you would also actually be facilitating video game contests on aircraft carriers as well, because there are very, very large audiences to literally watch young people or older people play video games in competitive ways that leave us in the dust, at least.
Well, I do have an Xbox in my office, but it's just for research.
So, of course, video games is another area where we're really rocking things. Princeton Review ranked us number 5 in the country for video game programs. If you want to come study design and future and have a career in video games, serious games, come to Michigan State.
In your travels, you go around, you meet a lot of people. I mean, we have Bill Mechanic, who was big with the Fox Studios and has gone on to his own. Pick out a few people that just kind of blew your mind as far as being Spartans and the type of job, the uniqueness of the job that maybe they had coming out of Michigan State.
Coming out of Michigan State, let me focus more specifically on the College of Communication, if I can. And it's a range of people. So I would go back to one alum, communication alum, from a number of years ago. She probably wouldn't necessarily want me to say the date. She actually won an award last year for the university, an alumni award. She was a communication major, but she went on to med school and became someone very significant in the medical field in her area as well, all the way to folks that we have, Clark Bunting, who runs Discovery, who is giving back to this university in ways that people can't imagine. There are certainly the obvious ways that impact students directly through financial support, but he and others like him are actually giving us the kind of guidance and advice we need to change our curriculum and educational experience in ways that will prepare students for the world tomorrow. All the way to a very young alum I met last year at Disney Studios in Southern California, who came to college and studied communication and then graduated from college with a whole new career field that's in play. And so she is running social media for new films that are coming out of Disney right now. And so when our students start as freshmen, by the time they're ready to graduate, there are new careers and jobs that they never dreamed of when they came to school.
So I thought she might mention one of the two communication grads right in front of her.
Yeah.
But I guess
I'm saving the best for last.
How do you keep up with all this change that's happening so fast? How do you adjust the curriculum on the fly like this?
Well, it's really much more strategic and thoughtful than on the fly, if you will. Some of it started a couple of years ago. We had significant budget challenges, as did all higher ed institutions. And we decided, hey, this is the time, frankly, when nobody's looking. So let's do some very, very big and bold things. And so in one avenue, we recreated our entire media curriculum, and we threw away department silos, and we created a curriculum that garnered so much excitement that it expanded to an initiative called the Media Sandbox. And so students start their freshman year, and they get a series of two-credit courses in storytelling and creativity. And then they get a menu of one-credit courses in all the media production types of areas, and they pick and choose. And then that way, they're actually ready to go into their major with the critical thinking and skills that they need to apply to their specific area. And they get experiences through this kind of creative laboratory and learning space that we've created that's really different from any other university. And we are getting a great deal of attention. We thought from around the country. Now we're seeing from around the world, because the Media Sandbox is different than any other place is actually doing this. And much of that credit goes to a faculty who think fast and move fast, who embrace letting students help us decide and understand where things need to go, and amazing alum that are not shy about telling us what we need to do.
One of your roles now as the dean is to take all that we grew up with in the College of Communications and then web it into the rest of campus as a dean. How challenging has that been for you to grasp understanding of everything else that's going on in all the other colleges, and at the same time strengthen, because you've done an incredible job here, but just continue to strengthen the college that Scott and I are so proud of?
Well, thank you. We appreciate and we'll take compliments wherever we can get them. And I always say most important part of my job is increasing the value of the degrees for all the people that came before, and we're quite serious about that. So we don't want you two to ever worry about employment, you know, anywhere ever. It's a fabulous time to be in a college of communication for many reasons. The most important is that the whole world has recognized that communication related fields are the sweet spot, the nexus of everything that occurs, whether it's through health or medical colleges, whether it's through business colleges or engineering activities that occur, or ag or natural science or law. There's a point, there's a pivot where all things connect through communication. And so it has actually been quite an easy message to spread throughout the campus. And we find that our faculty and our students are really embraced by all of our peers at other colleges because of what we can bring and add to not only the educational experience, but the range of research that the university is seeking as well.
From an educational standpoint, where does social media fit into the educational process at Michigan State when you talk about Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and the like? Is that in the classroom now? Is it being applied as a teaching, learning tool at the present time? And as you're going through that, what's the next thing out there? What do you think is on the horizon as far as advertising and other forms of communication that seem to be sweeping the world pretty quickly?
The first part of the question was how successfully are we integrating social media into the educational experience of students? And I think there is tremendous variability, not only by college, but within colleges and by faculty. And if you want to reach a person under 21, you need to embed these technologies in your classroom space. So, for example, anyone under 22 jokes that the only people they email are their parents, grandparents, and professors, because they do not email or use that format of communication anymore. And so a number of professors have embraced this. And, you know, they accidentally were using learning systems like Angel, which we have at Michigan State, which is a form of social media and collaboration tool. A number are actually moving on to more popular sites like Facebook and integrating them in their classes. And then the ones that are really bold have the guts to have a class of 300 people in front of them, have a big monitor behind them, and during class have the students be tweeting the whole time as well, so that it's literally a part of the classroom. And what we're finding with that is that participation goes through the roof, because now you don't have the average student who's in the back of the room and embarrassed to raise their hand, but they're tweeting, "I don't get it," or "That was a great point," or telling their own example. And so a good professor can stay on top of it and integrate into the class as well. So we're really seeing all of it. Second part of your question was about looking in my crystal ball. I don't even think I need a crystal ball. I think it's obvious to all of us, and it's mobile, 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 and then one more time for the record, mobile. It is, if it's portable, if it's in your hand in some way, in terms of content, in terms of how we're going to move and generate revenue and share information, it's mobile. I'm sure you guys have read that more people are accessing the web on mobile devices now than on traditional devices, and so we are pivoting to move in that direction.
What makes a good professor?
A good professor, I think, is someone who is has an insatiable appetite and curiosity about things. And so with their students wants to always be asking what's next, what's next? You know, how do we understand humans and human behavior, and how do we improve the quality of life for people through what we know and what we do, recognizing that we'll never actually get there in our careers, but having the opportunity to always get to ask the question. And it is a fabulous job.
Can you remember your favorite professor?
Oh, yeah. Dr. Tom Muth. Broadcast Tom law.
David Ralph.
Oh, yeah. Two very, very good ones. And I will say, as I go around the world and I meet with alum, those two names come up quite a bit from folks that studied with them. So you guys pick some good ones.
Yeah. And fit your definition, I think.
I think so.
How does public broadcasting survive in a Netflix world?
We have got to embrace taking risks. And part of what we're doing with the move of WKR TV and radio into the college is a couple things. One is actually hot off the presses. A press release is going out today integrating KAR into the college and what we do. And so we're announcing 10 brand new classes that are going to start summer and fall and spring of next year that are totally integrated into work with, for, and about WKAR. Some of these are the obvious ones, you know, having a news bureau, doing production types of classes. And some of these are out of the box a little bit. PR classes and public media. We have a graduate class that's going to be about branding public broadcasting and TV and radio. We've got a sales communication program. I don't know if you know this. We have a sales comm specialization in partnership with the business school. They actually have a record that would rival Coach Izzo's. They just captured their third national championship since 2008 as a sales communication team. So we're going to literally bring in the sales comm interns and have them do the underwriting for WKR as well. So part of it is keeping ahead. We're in a unique position of merging an academic institution with public broadcasting, which is very unusual. And so we're going to dive all in and do it. The second piece of that is we have an alum from the college, Jana O'Brien. Some of you may recognize Jana, who is a media consultant, who has graciously agreed with a partner to do some work with us, pro bono work with us, envisioning for WKAR. And this is all about who our audience should be, and if that's going to be our audience, how do we get there, both with content and platforms as well. So we got to think big and bold, and we'll have a plan March 1st that we will share with you if you're interested.
On demand. That seems to be the magic word nowadays. People don't like linear stuff anymore. How is WKAR moving in that direction?
In a couple of different ways. One is related to the migration to new platforms. And so we can't be thinking anymore of just real time. Certainly there's room for that, and there'll always be room for different types of content that make sense in that way. But if you've ever been to the websites before, there is you know what? There's great opportunity through the digital platforms that are in play. WKR is going to be migrating over to a standardized web platform that's being provided by PBS NPR for the entire U.S. So we will have access to some new tools that really give us national linkage. We're going to do that, and then we're going to see what we like about it and then adjust as necessary, because our audience and our base is mid-Michigan, and that's who we're here to serve.
It's all about local. It really is. I think, you know, from an athletic perspective, we have great partnerships with the Big Ten Network, with our video screens. We employ a lot of students that come through that want to get into the business, and I think that can do nothing but improve. You watch the Big Ten Network, you see some of the celebrities that are getting on from some of the other institutions. Of course, we've had Mateen, and Steve Smith does an outstanding job. But I think that's an area we can capitalize on even in the future, because it is becoming even more so a communication world, with the immediacy of getting some of our kids that are interested in that line of work. Kirk Cousins has mentioned that may be something in his future, to be on ESPN and replace Kirk Herbstreit down the line. So our horizon is there for partnership. We've already got a great one, but, you know, as we move forward, we look to engage, and there's no – my son is actually going through the process right now that I went through. He's a freshman on campus, and he's trying to make that difficult decision between communications and business. And you know which way dad's pushing him.
Right. Well, you can do both.
Yeah, you can do both. Yeah. And it's you know, it's a great college. I wouldn't be where I was or am or have been without this place.
Well, and you're not done yet.
I'm not done yet. I hope not.
We all know that. So a big dream in our college is to have the athletic director at Michigan State teach a course in the college. So we'll be talking about that. I think there's some real room for PR communication in the field of sports.
Well, Mr. Westerman and I are partnering on a radio show. Maybe we could partner on a class,
very
too.
Good. Like that.
He's always looking for help.
Very good. I bet you might rival Professors Ralph and Muth.
You know, one of the highlights for me this year of the Grand Awards was that WKAR-TV streamed it for us. We had a fantastic high-definition video stream that Gary Reed helped us set up. And that feels to me like that's going to become more of the norm for us to be able to present these events in real time.
Absolutely. Why not? There's no reason not to. And certainly, to your comments to the Big Ten Network, we actually have faculty in the college that are co-appointed with the Big Ten Network as well, and
right.
are very appreciative of the opportunities it brings to our students throughout mm-hmm. the college. They do mm-hmm. a broad array of fun work.
Yep. It's an outstanding production.
Pam Witten is the dean of MSU's College of Communication Arts and Sciences, and we're broadcasting this very program from her facility in the CAS building here in East Lansing. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Heart of the campus.
MSU, we love thy shadows.
Our mission is to be your personal network for life.
Scott Westerman leads the Michigan State University Alumni Association.
Sing our
So what that means is when you graduate from college, we'll help you find your first career. When you move to any city, anywhere, we'll help you connect and settle. If you're mid-career and want to reinvent yourself, we'll help you find a new passion. And if you need advice or a friend anywhere in the world, the MSU Alumni Association will connect you with the 500,000 Spartans out there that are always ready to take your call.
Join the Michigan State University Alumni Association online at alumni.msu.edu. Alumni.msu.edu. MSU Ag Bio Research, leading innovation in food, natural resources, and energy.
Well, one of the things we want listeners to know is how connected we are, that we're in a response mode of addressing real life problems in the real world here in Michigan.
Dr. Steve Pepke leads MSU Ag Bio Research.
Well, we're everywhere. We're the face of MSU across the state, in the local communities with infrastructure and research expertise to address those local problems. MSU Ag Bioresearch is the research engine that undergirds the food and agricultural industry in the state, that undergirds our natural resource usage, recreational usages of sport, fishing, forestry, all of those things. And of course, with the recent interest in renewable energy, we have in a very big way moved into this arena as well.
MSU Ag Bio Research.
For more MSU Today, visit us on the web at msutoday.com.
Thank you for listening to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Please visit us online at spartanpodcast.com and tune in every Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock for MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.